නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ So probably you can remember that we have referred Hattisariputta Sutta during the last couple of discussions while we are discussing about the Animitta, the signless state of the mind. So that Hattisariputta Sutta, I said that we'll take separately because it has something very interesting, and that's what today I am trying to take up. And it starts like this. So during that time Buddha was dwelling in Isipatana in the Varanasi, where he has delivered his first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, at one time. So he is residing in this Isipatana Rama, and now during that time, on returning from the alms round, so monks have gathered and they were discussing certain dhamma, particularly the higher teachings of the Buddha. And so the discussion has gone with the elder monks, and Venerable Mahakottita is also there. And while this discussion is carried out, Venerable Hattisariputta, being a young venerable, seems to be a newcomer, keep on interrupting the discussion. Now at that time, Venerable Mahakottita informed Venerable Sariputta, when elder bhikkhus are engaged in a discussion pertaining to the Dhamma, so don't interrupt them. So you need to restrain yourself, you need to relax yourself, till your time comes, you need to be silent. So don't interrupt them. So this is the kind of a comment what Venerable Mahakottita has mentioned. So during that time, by the way, there are several other monks also staying who are somewhat dear to Venerable Hattisariputta. So they actually mention to Venerable Mahakottita, so don't disparage Venerable Hattisariputta. So he's also wise and he's also capable of giving his comments to this discussion. So they actually have taken the side of Venerable Hattisariputta and thinking that he is really a capable and talented person, so he is worthy of giving a comment. But here Venerable Mahakottita, by the way, denied, telling it is quite difficult to know someone else's mind. It is very difficult to assess someone's skills. And then he is giving a series of situations, so that is what actually this whole sutta is talking, and it has basically six such scenarios. So number one is related to the restrainment. You know that when we consider the monks, so they have to restrain themselves, and typically they are expected to stay with the teacher for at least 5 years, what we call as a kind of a dependency period, nissaya, a kind of a dependency period where the young monk, the novice, staying with the teacher for about 5 years, knowing about various customs, learning various traditions, having some understanding about the precepts, learning about the meditation and practicing, developing mindfulness, and learning how to preach, how to teach, so etc. Many, many things are there. So he has to learn because it's an entirely different subject. So therefore, Buddha recommends monks to stay at least 5 years with a teacher within a monastery without going out alone. And while this particular monk is with the teachers and maybe even with the Buddha, so he behaves properly and he is really well restraining himself. But there could be a situation when he go out, or when the teachers are absent, teachers are not there, or Buddha is not there. So this particular monk can become somewhat forgetting about his restrainment. he now again deal with the others, maybe lay people, kings, ministers, members, other sectarians, sectarian teachers, sectarian disciples. So various different kinds of groups with such various different kind of groups. So this monk start moving with and dealing with, going ahead, and all that can cause the previous restrainment to forget. And ultimately all the different defilements again popping up in the mind, creeping up in the mind, and ultimately even the lust can invade his mind. So when lust invaded his mind, so probably even he might give up the training. He might even give up his monkhood. Now, for this actually a very interesting simile Venerable Mahakottita is giving. Suppose there is a crop-eating bull. Any bull may be eating any kind of a crop, particularly so now in this agricultural society. You know, when the paddy harvest is there, so certain bulls actually prefer to go to the paddy field and eat the paddy, and then they may all destroy the whole paddy field. So what they do is they are binding this bull to a strong kind of a post. Now with using a strong rope. But now suppose that if this bull being able to break the rope, so what will happen? Is it possible for us to assure that he will not go to the paddy field and eat the crops, maintain his restrainment without harming any of the harvest? Or what would be the situation? Now actually the other monks, when Venerable Mahakottita asked from them, so they mentioned actually it is not possible. So this particular bull might go to the paddy field or any other crop, and it will destroy that crop. It will destroy the harvest. So that is the situation. Now similarly, Venerable Mahakottita is saying, so when this particular monk is within the circle, within the monastery, while dealing with the teachers, elders, so he may behave well, but it doesn't guarantee yet whether once he has gone out, he would behave properly. So that is the case. So this is one situation that Venerable Mahakottita is talking, particularly related to our Vinaya, related to our discipline. So people are trying to discipline themselves, but not with a proper motivation, but just to obey or abide by the rules and regulations, but still they consider it as a burden and it's a kind of a hassle, it's a disturbance. They want to go out, they want to move with others, be friend with others. So all that are there, but still they are trying to restrain themselves. Once they get a chance, so everything they forget, and they start dealing with the others, moving with the others, talking with others, chattering with others, and everything happens. Ultimately he even forget about his practice, and ultimately even can disrobe. So this is one scenario related to our Vinaya, related to the discipline. Because as you know, as monks, so it is not merely the meditation and the practice, and it has the Vinaya side as well, the discipline part as well. So first Venerable Mahakottita is talking about this discipline part. Then now he is talking about the practice, the second scenario. Suppose that particular monk is there, so he was able to practice first jhana. So he has abandoned the sensual desires, all sensual pleasures, and all different unwholesome states. Vivicheva kamehi, vivichakusalehi dammehi, savittakkan savicharan vivekajan pijasukan patamajjahanan upasampajja viharati. So basically he is able to now establish himself in the first jhana. Now first jhana is very interesting, as we already discussed to some extent. So when someone attains it at very first, So he feel really overwhelmed by that, because it is quite joyful, and fair amount of rapture is there, and his mind keep calm, relax, and the blissful experience, and all that actually very much like he is now overwhelmed by that. He is quite happy about it, and he is quite happy about his attainment. And by the way, he takes it too far, thinking that okay, now I am quite accomplished, and I am one with the owner of first jhana. I am one with such capacity. So basically kind of an overestimation can happen, because this is a kind of secluded experience, and there may be a situation that he may take it too much. And ultimately what happened, he now want to move with the others. He has a desire to deal with the other affairs, other lay followers and lay activities, and going out, mingling with others, and all that. Ultimately what happened? So he loses his practice, and again he simply start too much dealing with talking and chattering and all that, and ultimately again the lust can invade his mind, because all the defilements are still there. So it was very much like suppressed because of the power of concentration. But now as he forgets about his training, again all the lustful thoughts, sensual desires going to arise, and ultimately his mind again become very much like pervaded or overwhelmed by lust. Again, there is a possibility he can even revert to the lay life. Now, Venerable Mahakottita is giving another simile here. Suppose there is a crossroad. And typically now we are talking about little old-fashioned rods, unlike today, like carpeting and all. Sophisticated kind of rods are not there. So what they are having is the typical rods where the carts can go through. Now suppose there's a situation, a rain happens, and this thick droplets are now happening, and as a result of that, all the what we call, say, the dust completely vanished. Now it has become somewhat muddy. The road has become muddy instead of it is dusty. Now Venerable Kottita is asking, is it possible for us to say, now this crossroad will never show up with any dust? Now the others, other monks are telling, no, it is not, we can't guarantee like that. There may be another situation. After some time this rain will stop. There will be a very hot season. Again, others start walking through these crossroads. People are going through, and the carts are going through, cattle and goats are going through. So all different transportation happen, usage of those roads happen. And again, the sun will heat up the area so that the moisture will be dried up. And ultimately, again, the dust can happen. So similarly, Venerable Mahakottita is saying, even though one is able to abandon lustful thoughts, abandon all unwholesome states of mind, and then suppressing all that, one is able to attain first jhana, it doesn't guarantee that the previous lustful thoughts, previous defilements may not arise in his mind again. So once he forgets about his practice, once he loosens his practice, once he loosens his concentration, so all that, all defilements may reappear. So this is a kind of a common situation, because sometimes what happens is that when one goes through a certain amount of concentration, it is so blissful, and one may even get addicted to it. And as a result of the power of concentration, you can't feel much of a desire, much of a desire in the sense lustful desire, or any much of any kind of an aversion. And mind always try to dwell with happiness, because you are gaining fair amount of happiness while you are dealing with the jhana. But suppose you may come through a situation that either you get sick, as a result of that you are unable to deal with your practice, or you are going through some activities, say your relatives are visiting, maybe friends are visiting, and you may have to go some particular place with them to deal with them, and various other activities, situations are there where you are unable to continue your practice. Now what happened? Your power of concentration reduced, power of mindfulness reduced, and all that happened, and then again and again, slowly, slowly, all those laid aside defilements again creep in. Again mind become deluded, again mind become defiled. So now Venerable Mahakottita is talking about this second scenario, about the first jhana. Now he is talking about the second jhana next. Now while dealing with the first jhana, suppose a particular monk has thought, okay, this first jhana is somewhat noisy and has some defects. Let me abandon the vitakka vichara, the applied mind and the sustained thought. So let me get on to the second jhana. Now he is getting on to the second jhana, which is more powerful, and the concentration is very strong compared to the first jhana. And the piti is also intense, the rapture is also pretty good. So he is quite happy about the achievement in the second jhana. Now he even overestimates himself. Okay, now I am no more a first jhana person, now I am a second jhana practitioner. I am quite capable. Others are still struggling while I am spending hours in the second jhana. So likewise, one can become conceited based on the second jhana. And later probably he wants to talk to the others. Maybe he is explaining his practice, and he is preaching, teaching, all that happens to the lay people, and they start talking to him, and other ascetic groups also come and talk to him. Various sectarian disciples, teachers are also coming and talking, and he slowly, slowly lose his time to practice, to continue his practice. Now, ultimately what happened? Again his mind gets defiled. Various thoughts may reappear, thinking starts again tormenting him, lustful thoughts again arising, and all the laid aside defilements again re-arise. Ultimately, it is possible he might even give up the practice, give up the training, and even he can become a layperson again. Now, we are talking here as a scenario of a monk. Actually, same thing is common to lay people as well. Say you are a lay practitioner and you are practicing a particular jhana, and you feel quite confident about it, and rather than getting much into the vipassana, and you are fairly absorbed to the second jhana, but due to some reason that you are unable to practice. So that would be enough for you to go through a kind of a downfall, and ultimately you might completely forget about the practice. Even probably there is no time to practice because of some reason, and ultimately nothing will be available. You might even forget about the practice altogether, give up the practice altogether, because once you have tried again, but you are no closer to the previous experience, and you are quite disheartened, because I was ardently practicing but now nothing is there. So you feel quite disheartened about what has happened, and that makes you further discouraged about to practice, ultimately give up the whole practice. That can happen. And now the third scenario. So here, with respect to the second jhana, Venerable Mahakottita is giving another simile. And he is telling, okay, there is a there's a kind of a large pond, and because of the now suppose that not far from a village or town there was a large pond, and here he's talking about kind of shells. Probably you might have seen in the at the say shore there may be certain seashells and other various different kinds of shells which are quite beautiful, and children are collecting them, all that are there, and maybe certain pebbles are there, certain gravel is there. But suppose there is a huge rain. Now what was gathered all together at the bank might all disappear because fair amount of water being spilling out. Now you can't see the pebbles, you can't see the gravel, you can't see the shells. But now Venerable Kottite is asking, is it possible to say that you will never see them? So those will never reappear. So then monks are telling, no, no, it is, we can't guarantee like that. So people start taking water out from this particular pond, and it may even evaporate, and maybe animals are also coming, and later there could be even a drought. So different causes can be, can happen. Now ultimately those pebbles, those shells, gravel reappear. So only a temporary time that we were unable to see them. But once those causes are abandoned, again we can see them. So similarly, Venerable Mahakottita is saying, so even though one is able to establish in the second jhana, it doesn't guarantee that you are free from any kind of a defilement. So if you are unable to practice, if you are becoming somewhat too much engaged with other things, so those defilements, particularly sensual desires, reappear, and you might even go through a kind of a downfall. Now the fourth scenario is about the third jhana. Similarly, you can now understand the situation. So he is practicing, one is practicing third jhana, and he is somewhat familiar with it now, confident about it, and even overconfident about it. And ultimately he may deal with others, other mundane activities, no time to practice, and again lustful thoughts, sensual desires invades his mind, and ultimately he might even, if he is a monk, he might even give up the training. Now here also Venerable Kottita is giving an example, a simile. Now assume that there is a person who is going through some sickness. So because of that sickness, so what different food is not appealing to him. So probably you might have your own experience. Assume that you got some high fever, maybe a viral fever or something. And as a result of that, what happens? You lose your appetite. You can't even eat the most delicious food. There may be previous occasions that you are quite fond of eating it, but now you don't have any appetite to it. And now here actually this is one case actually. So this is another situation that we can say later, once he is getting well, he may be able to arouse his appetite again, regain his appetite, and again he may start eating it. Now actually the simile given is little different, where Venerable Mahakottita is saying, assume that there is a person who is well taken his food. I mean he already had his meals and he has finished all the delicious meal. And now assume that someone want to give some yesterday food. It's maybe little stale food. Now if that ma- how can we say, will that man eat that stale food? So we can say no, I mean, because he's already finished, already full, and what he has eaten is also quite delicious. So the previous day food is not something appealing to him. Now, will that assure for him in case he is not getting any kind of a food in the future? But what is only available is the yesterday's food. But there is no food today at all. He didn't receive any food today. But only yesterday food is available. On such case, what is the case? What is the situation? Then this man even may ask what is available. So once the person is giving him even the yesterday food, because of the hunger, he might even eat that. Now we can see kind of a scenario here. Now the third jhana. The third jhana is talking about a kind of a happiness. It's a very soft kind of happiness. So all the lustful thoughts are fairly abandoned, and his happiness is very sublime kind of happiness. But it doesn't guarantee that he might not return back to the mundane happiness. Suppose he is a practitioner, he is practicing third jhana, and he is quite happy during that time. So he is not might happy about going through seeing a cinema, or going to a film, or to a musical show, or dealing with the friends. So such kind of mundane kind of activity he might not prefer, because more and more sublime happiness is available for him. But it doesn't guarantee he might not go back. He will never go back. We can't guarantee like that. So there could be a situation that he is unable to involve with his practice, continue his practice. Now he again been driven back to the old habits. He's going back to the old habits. Again his mind get overwhelmed by lust, hatred, delusion, etc. Now he forgets the practice altogether. So this is possible. And then Venerable Mahakottis is talking about the fourth jhana, some similar approach. And the simile given here is again different one. Suppose that in a mountain glen there was a lake sheltered from the wind and devoid of waves. Now here the mountains are kind of covering the whole lake. So when there is some sort of wind blowing, so the lake does not have any waves, because mountains are fairly covering it. Winds are blowing, but mountains are giving a fair amount of shelter, fair amount of coverage. As a result of that, the lake doesn't have any waves. So now Venerable Mahakottit is asking, can we guarantee that no waves will ever happen in this lake? And then the other Venerables are saying, oh no, we can't say like that. There could be a kind of a rainstorm, a huge rainstorm. Probably you might have seen that recently certain parts of China has gone through such a real huge, very strong rainstorm. So when such happen, so you can't stop any of these. So this coverage coming from the mountains is not enough. So this lake become really turbulent, and waves may appear in the lake. So likewise, Venerable Mahakottita is saying, even though he has practiced fourth jhana, it doesn't guarantee the kind of shivering of the mind, a kind of, wavering of the mind. So the mind still can go through some sort of a shaky situation. Now the similes given are somewhat particularly given to the certain situation. Now, with respect to the fourth jhana, that idea is it is very, very strong, very, very stable kind of a mind. Because the equanimity talking in the fourth jhana is a considerable type of equanimity. So his mind has become very, very stable. So that's why he's giving in the simile. So there is the four different kinds of mountains all around the sides, so that the lake is well fortified, well, the lake is fairly protected. It may remain very calm, quiet, without going through any kind of a turbulence. Even though wind is there, at the outside, a fair amount of coverage is coming because of the mountains. But still there is a situation, this stillness or this equanimity, this stability of the mind may go through some sort of a turbulence. So the given example is kind of a storm wind, which can even makes the lake turbulent. Similarly, even though one has very strong fourth jhana, even that can go through some sort of a scattering. Assume that you went through some difficult situation, you ended up with maybe a sickness, so that you are unable to practice at all, or you have to go through some hardship, or maybe very difficult excitement, a fearful situation. So such kind of extreme situations can make the mind again quite vulnerable. So you lose your steadiness of the mind, stability of the mind, and probably such kind of a situation can disturb the mind altogether. And on the other hand, if you lose your time to engage with the practice and say you start dealing with others too much, not spending enough time for yourself, that also can be another reason to go through a kind of a downfall. Now these are all talking about, first one is talking about the discipline, the Vinaya side. The other four are talking about the fourth jhana. Now we are coming to the sixth part, which we already discussed, about the signless concentration, Animitta Samadhi. Now someone is thinking, now he actually has gone through a fair amount of Vipassana practice. Now, so far we have discussed about the discipline as well as some other practice, but now Venerable Kottita is talking about the Animitta Samadhi. So that is coming through Vipassana practice. One has gone through a fair amount of Vipassana practice. As a result of that, he was able to establish his mind immediately into the Animitta Samadhi. So he is quite familiar with it. He doesn't now have to go through the systematic practice of Vipassana, because already he has gone through it, and as a result of that, now he can quickly attune his mind to the Animitta Samadhi, the signless concentration. But now what happened? Now he feel overconfident, maybe overestimating himself, thinking, okay, I am a person who is having this Animitta Samadhi, which is so powerful, very strong, now nothing much to do, almost like an arahant, no lustful thoughts, no angry thoughts, and mind also quite clear, and I feel tranquil everywhere, and no tension, so I can now deal with anything, and now he slowly bonds up with the others, intimate with the others, loosens up his time and talks with them, talks with the lay people and engage with many, many other things. Now slowly, nimittas are now popping up. The signs are again intruding the mind, invading the mind. Now Animitta Samadhi, as we discussed, talking about the thorough understanding of the impermanence, so that ultimately mind comes to a situation where not interested of picking up the signs. Even though one sees things, mind doesn't want to get involved, doesn't want to pick the signs, and mind remains fairly purified. But unfortunately, still this state is not yet well established. You are still at the developing stage, but not achieving that full accomplishment, accomplished state, stable state. Assume that you start dealing with many other things, now a downfall can happen. Now, a very interesting simile given here also, based on a situation where a king with his retinue, a royal army, going through a forest. Now, they are going to a faraway city, but they have to pass through a very thick forest. Now, they have to spend night at that forest. Now, since huge concentration of people are there, ministers, king, and maybe the elephants, horses, so many, many people are there. So they are making a fair amount of sound, even at night. So typically during the night from a forest, probably you can hear the crickets, their sound, and various other creatures, their sound. So the kind of very subtle kind of sounds are there at night at the forest. But now since this large gathering of people are there with their elephants and horses, so now those previously available creatures sound, cricket sound, is not available now. Now Venerable Mahakottite is asking from the other monks, now can we say, so those cricket sound, those creatures sound will never happen, will never appear. So then the other monks are telling, no, no, we can't say like that. Because once these ministers and the king and his retinue, his royal army, once they go away, at that moment, at that night, so again these crickets, these little sounds may reappear. So similarly, Venerable Mahakottita is now saying, even though one may gain Animitta Samadhi, if you are forgetting it, if you are unable to continue it, giving enough attention to it, spending some time on it, and maintaining kind of vigilant practice, using the Animitta Samadhi to cut off the defilements, to abandon the defilements. So if you are unable to do that, again there's a possibility to revert back. Again, mind get on to catch the signs, get defiled, ultimately you lose the whole thing. And even the monk can get on to the lower life. Now, so this is the explanation given by Venerable Kottita, and so after the explanation, maybe several days have happened. As he predicted, Venerable Hatti Sariputta given up the training and he returned to the lower life, he returned to the lay life. Now at that time, so those friends who actually had quite confidence about Venerable Hatti Sariputta again approach Venerable Mahakottita, and now they are telling, did you, Venerable Kottita, knew about Venerable Hatti Sariputta's mind? Even though when we are talking that he is a capable monk, you are not approving it, you didn't accept it, you say, informed us with various similes, what is the situation, even with the jhana practitioner, even with the vipassana practitioner, even with a disciplined monk, what would be the situation if something goes wrong? So you explain like that. So have you observed Venerable Hatha Sariputta's mind through your own mind, or any other deities came and informed you? And then Venerable Mahakottita is saying, I myself has seen Venerable Hatha Sariputta's mind. I understood his situation. Similarly, deities also have informed me that there could be a kind of a risk on how Venerable Hatti Sariputta is behaving. Now, when this incident has happened, those monks, those friend monks, again went back to the Buddha as well and informed the Buddha the whole story. So what has happened to Venerable Hatti Sariputta, what are the comments given by Venerable Mahakottita, and all that was informed to the Buddha. Bhante Chittatthi Sariputta gained such and such meditative dwellings and attainments, yet he gave up the training and returned to the lower life. Now Buddha is making a very, very interesting remark here. Before long, because Chitta will think of renouncing. So even though Chitta has gone back, Hattisariputta has gone back, he may feel the friction in the lay life. Because it seems that he has spent a fair amount of time in the robes. And once he has returned back, he may start feeling the friction. He may start feeling the kind of the burden of the lay life. And that indicates that before long he may return back. So similarly, as Buddha predicted, this Hattisariputta again returned back. Again he requested the monkhood. Again the monks have shaved him, given him the robes, and again he has become a monk. Now this time he was careful, by the way. He didn't go to deal with the others and talk and all that wrong conceit, overconfidence, that now he understood his mistake. Now he has withdrawn himself from all those and was diligent about his practice and become quite resolute in his practice and had a secluded place also for his practice. And ultimately he was able to completely given up all the defilements without reappearing them. That means ultimately he became an arahant. So this is how the story ends, this Hattisariputta Sutta ends, talking about various sides. In one sense about the discipline, the other side is the samatha practice, other side is the vipassana, and how one can even go through kind of a downfall. But if one is able to continue one's practice thoroughly, properly, there may be a situation that the defeated defilements may not reappear. Okay, so this is something for us to consider and to us also to have kind of as a warning for ourselves. And with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Any questions on your side, Bhante?
No, they are quite silent today. There's one question. Yeah.
Fine. Bhante, in the Potapada Sutta, it's mentioned that this...
Chitta
is the same.
I think so. He is the same person.
Okay.
Because with Potapada, there is this Chittahatti Sariputta coming to discuss with the Buddha.
Yeah.
And he was quite happy about that discussion, and ultimately he wants to become a monk. So he may be the same person.
Actually, my question is another one as well. The cessation perception of animitta concentration, right?
Cessation concentration is different.
I mean the animitta concentration.
Animitta, signless.
Concentration, right?
Signless.
Yeah, the signless concentration. It is said that it is a peak. There is a peak of cessation to it. And there are many ways. There is one and many, as Buddha said, it is one and many. I would take it that one and many means it is one peak but many ways to get there. Is that correct?
You are talking about the Potapada Sutta.
Yeah.
In the Potapada Sutta, actually Buddha is calling about the Sanyagga. Sanyagga is the peak of perception.
Yeah.
So the peak of perception, there are now, once Buddha delivered the discourse to Venerable, to this Potapada, actually during the discourse he is taking peak of perception as the nothingness, akinchanyayatana.
Yeah.
So at the nothingness, while he is dealing with the nothingness, Buddha say, okay, now this person come into a kind of a consideration. Okay, I was practicing first jhana, then I had an intention to achieve the second jhana by giving up first jhana. So I have achieved the second jhana. While I practicing second jhana, now I have an intention to go to the third jhana. So I have given up the second jhana, achieved the third jhana. While I am there, I want to achieve the fourth jhana. So I intended fourth jhana, given up the third jhana. So likewise, kind of a continuation of the intentions, continuation of a futuristic kind of event. So again and again, I am having some intentional participation to next jhana, next jhana, next jhana, giving up the old jhana. Now, once he reaches the nothingness, he come to a conclusion, okay, I'm not going to do it again. I don't want to have a future attainment anymore. And what I'm trying to do is to abandon existing, whatever the perceptions, existing feelings, formations, I'm going to abandon them, let them calm down. And I'm not going to have a future intention at all. So whatever intentionally made are causing some sort of a, say, impermanence. So it will, it is not something useful. So let me stop this whole process. Now he come to that conclusion, that decision, and as a result of that, what happens? So he don't have any futuristic intentions. All the intentions are now calmed down, relaxed, subsided, and existing feelings and thoughts are also calmed down. As a result of that, what happens? He is able to touch the cessation. Nirodham pusati. So that he is able to touch the cessation. Now Pottapada is asking very interesting question, and Buddha says this is the sanyagga. So this is the peak of the perception. Now Pottapada is asking, Bante, are you talking about only a single peak of perception, or are you talking many peak of perceptions? And then Buddha say, I am preaching both. So assume that you come to the first jhana, and you can come to that conclusion here itself. So I don't want to go future states. Let me finish everything here itself. So I am using the first jhana as my peak of perception, so that I am able to touch the cessation. Suppose you come to the second jhana, there you can come to the conclusion, okay, I don't want to go to the third jhana, I don't want to make any future intentions, let me stop all that, give up all that, so that ultimately even through the second jhana you can touch the cessation. So therefore, likewise, Buddha say, I am now referring so all these different states as peak of perceptions, not just one. So therefore, so the answer is, it is you can practice any of the jhanas, and there you can come to this decision. You can come to the conclusion, okay, I'm not going to future practice any other jhana or any other concentrated state. Let me stop preparations here altogether. You know that if we want to attain any kind of a jhana, we need to do a fair amount of preparations, fair amount of determination, fair amount of practice. I have to give up the existing one to prepare our mind to the next one. So let me stop all that. I'm completely giving up all the intentions, because it is preparing, making the mind a little burden and friction to the mind. So I'm stopping that altogether. And what is I am experiencing right now, I am allowing it to calm down, to relax. So as a result of that, he is able to touch the cessation.
And is the signless concentration sort of a way to get there as well?
Yes, definitely. Because while, now as we discussed last time, say, while you are in the signless concentration, there also Buddha say, okay, you need to reflect, this is also impermanent. Abhisankatang abhisanchetasikang. This is also constructed. This is also intentionally prepared. So it is your own practice helped you to achieve it. So it's also conditioned. What is conditioned is impermanent and subject to cessation, subject to passing away. So you are, rather than you are absorbed to the nothing, rather the signlessness, you are simply allowing it to also calm down, relax it. So when you calm down, loosen your excessive type of concentration, again the defilements can arise. Again, various thoughts can arise, because you are trying to maintain the mind at a very shallow level, so that again various hindrances can appear in the mind. So when hindrances are appearing in the mind, you can easily notice them and abandon them. So as a result of that, I mean, many different kinds of thoughts may appear and then reappear. You are practicing vipassana, basically. So you are using animitta as a kind of base for your further practice. So that is also, therefore, we can, as you suggested, we can consider as a peak of perception.
Yeah, because this answers my sort of my own little practice questions,
right.
Because
yeah.
I realize if you I tried different levels of energy
mm.
to apply different level of concentration and energy to
mm.
this signless concentration, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I realize at some level of energy the defilements come out.
Definitely. Let them come out. Let them come.
Ah, let them come.
Yeah. Let them come.
Oh, because I was a little afraid, you know.
No.
Oh, they appear. Oh no, they are back again. So I increase the energy again. Or
no. Because if you're increasing your energy, so then it's very much like you are maintaining the concentration so that the defilements can't attack it.
Yeah.
But once the defilements are there, you can easily notice them. So once you notice them, you can simply keep them aside rather than promoting them, rather than feeding them. So the defilements themselves don't have any energy further because you are not feeding them. You are not deluded by them. So as a result of that, now this is a way of reducing the defilements or abandoning the defilements or overcoming the defilements. This is the practice actually. So what happened later is that there may be a situation, even though you lower the energy, defilements may not arise.
That would be the beautiful
state. That beautiful state. Because now they are coming.
Yeah.
But you are addressing them. You are confronting them. So you recognize lustful thought. You recognize, harmful thought. So you, rather than promoting it, you see it as it's a mere perception. It's a mere thought. And if it is arising, it definitely has the nature to pass away. You don't need to struggle with it. It is not your thought.
Mm.
So simply practicing Chittanupassana basically. Using many methods. Whatever the method you like. So now that particular defilement slowly fades away. Another one come again, slowly fades away. Another one come again, slowly fades away. Now you still loosening the concentration. Loosening the energy.
Mm.
But no thoughts are now coming. No defilements are coming. Because defilements power has reduced.
Mm.
Because of your non-contribution. Previously what happened, when a defilement arises, we get deluded by that.
Mm.
We promoted that. So rather than letting it fade away, we have strengthened it. Now we are not strengthening it. Instead, we allow it to naturally fade away. Because they have the natural characteristic of fading away.
Mm.
So we accept that. We see it. We have that understanding. So it comes and it lets go. Naturally, it's being passed away. So therefore, don't simply maintain a strong energy so that nothing will appear. Rather, maintain a kind. Let the mind come to the shallow level, to the surface. Let them come, but you are properly dealing with them. As a result of that, later what happened, you may have no energy. No energy, no effort, but still no defilements.
Okay.
So some teachers are saying, right effort is no effort. So you come to a situation, okay, you have not exerting any effort, but defilements are also not there. Now that's a very beautiful situation.
I think so. I think I've touched base at some part of it because you do hear the defilements, but they are so far away
mm.
because you're doing sort of a balance of energy, right?
Mm.
They're so far away that you can hear them, but they are so far away you don't know
right.
really what they are anymore.
Right.
They have a form, they have a thing in the mind, but
mm.
they don't impact you.
Impact you, correct,
yeah.
correct.
Yeah.
But the moment that you further loosen the energy, there may be a situation they come.
Yeah, there may be a situation.
There means that
yeah.
they come to you, but you are prepared mm. already.
Yeah, you are
so
mindful.
You are mindful. So you can simply recognize them and slowly let them go. Let them naturally fade away. You don't need to be afraid because you are fairly, establishing yourself.
Hmm.
So that is the only way to overcome the defilements in the sense.
I see.
Seeing and knowing and seeing, so you are simply let them go.
Hmm. Okay. Thank you, Bhante. I love this signless concentration, but I know it's kind of... The mind is telling me, look, you gotta not be too strong inside, you know, not too concentrated inside this signless concentration, not too much energy inside. Gotta let it go. But I'm not listening to the mind, I'm just, no, it's fine. It's a tug and war situation, you know. So,
right.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so Buddha recommends, basically they are, so rather than attach to the concentration, so let it also break.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still breaking because I still have the defilements. Still the mind has certain impediments. still mind have certain latent tendencies.
Mm.
So that's why again and again and again, so this mind gets polluted. But more and more you go through this process, purification process, ultimately there may be a situation, okay, you are not exerting any effort, but no defilements, almost like they are faded away. Now you are maintaining the mind at a surface level without defilements.
Now you are a true Muni.
Yeah, we can say like that. So ultimately we can say only it is possible when one becomes an Arahant.
Mm.
But rather than maintaining a thorough, strong concentration, we have to come up to the surface level slowly, gradually, so that we also are able to recognize the defilements and slowly abandon them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Pandey.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Pandey. I'd like to invite Radhika for the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Devon Saranai Bante, can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
I have a couple of questions, but it's not from this talk, and then I have one from this talk.
Mm-hmm.
So I will ask the question. Is it okay if I ask you something that is not related to this talk?
Okay.
So I listened to something that you did call Vipassana Parikatha. It was in Sinhalese, but it was very good. And the one I listened to is July 27th. And how can I get the rest of them? Is there a link that it came accidentally to me. Is there a link or a place I can go to find these? And if you are still having them, can I join them? What time is it?
Uh-huh. No, actually, those are pre-recorded. And the ITN is the one broadcasting them. And you can visit their website. You can simply search in YouTube called ITN Buddhist.
ITN Buddhist.
ITN space Buddhist. And you can search it in the YouTube, ITN Buddhist. So once you go there, so this series of sermons should be there.
And are you doing them or are they finished? Like, are you still doing?
Actually, certain series we already finished. Now there's another series going to start next month.
Can anyone listen to it live, or is it that you have to record it and look through this ITN Buddhist?
No, the thing is, so we are going to a particular place to record it, and then those people offer it to ITN, and they are the ones broadcasting it. And once it is being broadcast, so they will publish it on their YouTube.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah.
So really we can't get it by going live and saying like, how about this Zoom that I want to listen to it, right?
Actually what you can do is, if you want to see it live, you need to connect to their live channel. So maybe their live YouTube channel is also available. So typically ITN will broadcast it on Saturdays at 6 a.m.
Saturday at 6 a.m. Sri Lankan time.
Exactly. So once it is broadcast, later they will publish it on their YouTube as a recording.
Oh, thank you so much, Bhante.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, now, there was in that, and I may have understood wrong because my Sinhalese isn't that good, that if you have made a prarthana, a strong aspiration, that is like the seventh person who is sitting that... you have made a prarthana, so you are doing bhava tanhava you have. So if somebody has made a prarthana and a strong one, how do you give it up? You don't want to give it up. You did something and you have to give it up, right?
No, that's the thing. So if you have a kind of a determination or kind of a wish, so if it is a proper one, if it is a good one, probably it helps you to practice, it helps you to further and further motivate you into the practice. So that's not a bad thing.
Yes.
So later, by the way, once you are continuing your practice, there may be a situation that you feel, it's also I have better have to give up. Because now I you come to a situation, okay, whatever a wish is a kind of a burden to the mind. Whatever wish is something that I am talking about, some futuristic event. So it's causing certain amount of agitation to the mind, a burden to the mind.
Yeah.
So let me give up everything and completely calm, completely relax in the present moment. So that is where we are talking about the appanihita. Say when you are practicing vipassana, so once you realize the what you call the unsatisfactoriness, dukkha, thoroughly, so there, according to Dhamma, there what the yogi might think is, whatever I am going to wish, even for the future, what I am trying to get is a kind of a dukkha, kind of a suffering. So what is the purpose of further wishing? So let me give up all the wishes, let me give up all the desires, all the futuristic desires, let me give up altogether. So then the mind get released because there are no desires.
Now this, sometimes I come to that state where I think I should give up, and I say I'm going to let whatever happen, right? I'm just going to be totally confident in the Buddha and the Buddha Dhamma,
good.
Right?
Yeah, that's great.
But then again, I think like that, right? And I say I'm going to whatever happens, and I go into my meditation, but again, sometime later, I don't think like that. I think back on my aspiration. So I guess I have to be a bit stronger.
During the practice, again and again, rest yourself. Allow the mind to completely rest at that moment without having any desires. I don't want anything. I am utterly happy in the present moment. Something like that.
Yeah. Now, the next one is, you know, all these higher jhanas and all, you know, like going to the fourth jhana, and then this, if we are not having a long practice like a monk, it's difficult for a lay person. Like for me, it's difficult because I try to do 2 hours, sometimes I can't sitting, but I do try to do walking too, because I like the walking a lot. So now, is it like a very easy, I mean, in the sense, is it very common that we can go to these 4 jhanas and all these things?
No.
For lay people?
No.
No, right?
No,
then
no.
Then how about animitta samadhi? Where does that animitta samadhi? Because I mean, for myself, I have given up trying. I thought that, I don't think that there is any way I can get the amount of meditation required like the monks do to go to that level.
No.
I try to do a...
Yeah, so there you have a different, so that is a wrong understanding. So you don't need jhana to attain animitta samadhi.
Oh, okay.
So you what you need
is... samadhi is somewhere in between?
No. Animitta samadhi, we can say a result of vipassana, not samatha practice.
Oh, so just looking and letting go, seeing the defilements and letting go.
Not really. You need at first assume that you have certain amount of concentration and mindfulness, and you are directing your attention to different bodily phenomena and see how they are coming and going, arising and passing away. So you thoroughly understand the impermanence characteristic.
Right.
And very rapid succession of appearing and disappearing, appearing and disappearing.
Yes.
So that leads to animitta.
Okay. So you don't, like, if by chance you recognize that you don't have any defilements of the 5 hindrances, then your mind is very calm, right?
Yeah.
You still have to, sometimes I will get that passing, arising and passing away, and it's very fast and all that. Sometimes I don't even have that.
That's why, I mean, mere absence of defilements can happen even at the samatha level. Say when you are at closer to a jhana, still the defilements are subsided, the hindrances are subsided. But we can't say we are at the animitta.
Right. So the animitta samadhi is when it is like no thoughts at all, and you have a pleasant thing, not a very joyful, but like kind of a
Equanimous.
Pleasurable. But it doesn't last. It's just gone. One meditation in a retreat, I might get, but I don't get it again.
No.
I don't know the,
yeah,
what.
That's the thing. So you need to practice satipatthana for a long time. But a thorough practice of vipassana is required to get on to animitta.
Okay.
Either it may be bodily phenomena related, dhatu manasikara, elements meditation type of practice, or vedana anupassana related to various feelings. You recognize how they quickly come and go. Or you are into chitta anupassana, seeing how various mental formations come and go, arise and pass away. So all that actually develops a fair amount of understanding onto the impermanence, the transience of the phenomena. So that is the one actually causing to lead towards the animitta.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Teruvan Sarnai, Swami Mahansa.
Yeah, Teruvan Sarnai.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. I'd like to invite Priyan and Suchiwa.
Hello, Bhante. I have a meditation question. Regarding contemplation. Is contemplation something you do while you're meditating, or is contemplation you do something after the meditation? And I'm kind of confused. So if you can explain what contemplation is and where happens.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate.
Yeah. So actually, it depends on how you interpret this term. Now, say for example, we just now discuss about the bodily phenomena. Say we are talking about various bodily phenomena like hardness, softness, roughness, smoothness, heaviness, lightness, maybe various movements, vibrations. So all are very much like very subtle bodily phenomena. And you can keep attention to all those different phenomena and see how they are behaving. So this is also a type of contemplation. So their thinking is not involved. Your mind is very silent, but quite attentive. You are maintaining a fairly sharp mindfulness and very precise type of concentration, focused attention. And you can see how these bodily phenomena are arising and passing away. This is also a type of concern. This is also a type of contemplation. But mind is very calm, relaxed, quiet. But on the other hand, say you are practicing asubha bhavana. Say you recognize the loathsomeness of the body, and you are again and again reminding your mind, okay, this is loathsome, etc., etc. So this is also a type of contemplation, but fair amount of mental involvement is there. Verbalization is there. So therefore, it depends on your practice, how you are applying your mind. Is it a very quiet, investigative type of practice, or you are purposely introducing kind of a series of thinking thoughts into your practice so that you are make use of it properly? So typically in the typical satipatthana practice, at the beginning, probably you may be using the thinking type of contemplation, but later it converts into a very silent observation.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's my confusion, is because there are different meanings for contemplation.
Yeah.
And listening to different talks. But say like you're doing the body part contemplation.
Mm-hmm.
That should be a thinking one, correct?
At the beginning, it's very much like that. Say, body parts, say you are paying attention to a particular body part and you are naming it, labeling it, and if necessary, you are adding it, telling it's also loathsome. So very much like a little bit of brainwashing. But later, actually, once you come to the elements meditation, you have to keep a very silent mind. You are not supposed to talk. You are not supposed to allow the mind to think. Rather, to silently observe.
So can you move forward in meditation without doing the active contemplation?
To certain people, maybe possible, but at the beginning, probably a little bit of contemplation may be useful to direct the mind, to properly establish the mindfulness. Even we are not using the term contemplation there. What we are using is the term noting. Say when your in-breath happens, you note it as in. When out-breath happens, you note it as out. So this is a mere noting of the phenomena. Later, you need to give up even that and maintain the silent observation.
I think past that, the noting section, and I get into, I have written to you also, where I get into a state where I don't have any sense of my senses nor my body, I'm in a state, and then, you know, probably half an hour, 45 minutes later, I get back into my breath and feel the breath again, and I'm not sure whether I was fast asleep or whether I was in a samadhi state, and trying to understand how I can know that.
Yeah, this is quite common, because when you start developing concentration, it is not immediately happening with a very pure type of concentration. It's a mixture of little bit of lethargy or little drowsiness, and then mind also has some amount of concentration. But later, as a result of the practice, you can give up that drowsiness part. You come to a fairly attentive kind of a concentration. Don't worry about it. You, with time, you will arrive at that.
Okay.
Anyway, practice walking meditation also. It helps you to develop this awareness, the wakefulness of the mind. Not mere samatha type of practice, but it is promoting you mindfulness and wisdom.
Okay, Bhante. Yeah, that's. I'm trying to do that, but it's hard to do. It's a little bit harder. But taking your advice and doing a little bit. Thank you.
Theravansan.
Thank you, Bhante. I'd like to invite Geshe for the next question.
Saranai Bhante, I hope you can hear me.
Yes.
Very good. Even from the today's talk as well, I was basically sort of thinking about it is we as lay life individuals. But the sutra talk or the discussion today was basically about a monk and how his life progressed in different time frames as well. But for us, how this can be related, I guess, is just try to keep a strict discipline to ourselves. I guess that should be our practice as well. And I thought that is something to sort of question as well. Mm-hmm. Because we, in this life, we basically engage with, you know, our kids, our work, our day-to-day political noise, and many other challenges. So with that mindset, would you advise how to sort of navigate this path?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting thing. So as we practice vipassana, so we get a kind of a reinforcement to the mind. So it is true at the beginning, particularly you need a fair amount of seclusion and go to a retreat and strengthen your faculties. But later, slowly, you get a sort of a reinforcement to the mind. Even amidst certain amount of disturbance, you are able to maintain fair amount of tranquility in the mind. So that is something that you need to check within yourself. Now, even though sights are there, sounds are there, smells are there, tastes are there, tangibles are there, is it possible for me to keep the mind unattached? Is it possible for me to keep the mind without any kind of a grasping, without any tanglement? So till that, we are very, very vulnerable. Till that, even a slightest sound, a little disturbance, say completely overwhelm us. But as we continue the practice, one day you may reach, okay, now I can withstand all these disturbances. I am not saying that everything, but at least a typical mundane kind of, a typical type of disturbances, you can withstand. There may be certain extreme cases, still you go through kind of a shivering, some sort of disturbance, but there also you can quickly recover. So that is also part of the practice. That is also actually a result of the practice, as we discuss as resilience. So once you shifted from your normal, you may be able to return back to normal without much time, without much hassle.
Yes, I kind of today around noon time I was planning to go for a walk. Basically, that is the time that I usually do my walking meditation. And the moment I start doing it, I was seeing a lot of objects around me, and I sense these thoughts, just, I need to do this, that, the other. And then I saw these thoughts rising, but I didn't react to them. But I saw those thoughts sort of disappear as well. So I wonder whether, is it just the thoughts come, you just observe as the third person, and then it just slowly dies off.
Correct.
That I don't attach to it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I want, I can attach to it and then react, or just try to sort of see what I need to do as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I see that these thoughts sort of comes and goes, and but still I find it sometimes, you know, like I might get lost in some of these thoughts because I probably react too fast.
Mm-hmm. So it is natural. So what you said is quite natural. So we can't say that we are perfectly able to handle each and every thought. There may be situations that we are being deluded by it. So there may be a very short thinking started, but at a given moment you may be able to recognize it and to abandon it. That's why I mentioned, say, there may be some typical thoughts you can still recognize, okay, they are simply coming and going, they are merely thoughts. But there may be some very, very interesting and, you know, compelling type of thoughts which you are compelled to think, easily driven by that. And later, anyway, at a moment that you may figure it out, okay, oh my goodness, I lost it. I went into a kind of unmindful state. So at that moment, you can apply your brakes, establish mindfulness, and basically return back to the calmness, tranquility, and unattached state of mind.
Yes. Thank you, Bhante. I think I understand well here. One other, since I'm helping Jennifer on these discussions as well, I was thinking of bringing this Friday, there is going to be another discussion, monthly discussion on this mindful practice, I guess. So is that something that just want to let clarity of mind? So I hope everybody is getting these message emails as well. So if they want, they can participate.
Good, good. Yeah, that is from Ms. Shalika. So she's organizing that. Probably if you have that notice, you can pass it to the group also. And yes, from your time, it is on this Friday night. And from Sri Lanka time, it is on Saturday 7 a.m. Clarity of mind through mindfulness. That's a month.
It is the same time.
Yeah, it's a monthly.
Same time for, yes, Eastern time, 9:30 p.m.
Right.
But once a month, right?
Yes, it's a monthly program. Yes.
Thank you, Bhakt.
Okay.
Thiruvan Sarnai.
Yeah, Thiruvan Sarnai.
Thank you, Bente. There is a written question here.
Uh-huh.
It says, Venerable Bente, what is the dukkha element of experiencing a jhana? Is it the process of trying to maintain it?
Mm-hmm. So you can look at it from different angles. So when one is in jhana, you are unable to see it. So when you are trying to reflect, that means you are out of the jhana. You have emerged from the jhana. And the typical thing is Buddha, as we little touched, so Buddha asked us to see, this is also impermanent. This is also not everlasting situation. This is also impermanent. And why it is impermanent? Because it is conditioned. We have prepared it. We have prepared our concentration, our practice. As a result of that, this is produced. This is also a dependently produced situation. So this whatever dependently produced, dependently prepared, dependently arisen, so they are subjected to arising and passing away. They are impermanent. They will pass away. So once you look at like that, you are not attracted to it, or rather you are not addicted to it. You can simply let it go. You can make use of it as a kind of a base to practice vipassana. So it is possible to use jhana to practice vipassana, but you need to emerge from it and look at it from a different point of view. And the dukkha of the jhana is, in one sense, this is impermanence, because you can't have it forever. It is also a conditioned situation. And on the other hand, assume that you are talking about the first jhana, and it has little bit of friction of again and again. You need to apply your mind to a particular object, so that is also making the mind somewhat wavering, little bit of friction, little tension produced because of this applied mind, and again sustaining the attention onto that object. That's why you are getting to the second jhana. Once you reach second jhana, there also you understand certain kind of friction. So likewise, so more and more one practices jhana, if you are able to understand its own disadvantages, its own little friction, so that makes you to get involved with the vipassana practice, rather than thinking jhana is the ultimate. Because if we think, okay, jhana is the ultimate, then it's a wrong understanding. It's a misunderstanding. We can say a wrong view. As we discuss in the Brahmajala Sutta, so Buddha talks about Ditta Dhamma Nibbana type of wrong view. One can achieve a certain jhana, and he considers this as the Nibbana. But that is kind of a missing a point. So therefore, if you have jhana, you can keep it, but you need to emerge from it and see its impermanent nature and what are the kind of mental phenomena, formations arising and passing away. And for that to happen, you need to loosen the concentration. As here Mr. Kelvin Men explained, so whatever the concentration state, while you are there, reduce your energy, reduce your applied effort. Then you are shallowing the mind. You are coming to the surface of the mind. And then again thoughts are appearing. There you can recognize them and let them go. There you can practice vipassana. That is the way actually you can achieve maybe animitta, appanihita, sunyata. So those are actually the vipassana based type of concentrations, which ultimately lead to abandon all the defilements.
Thank you, Bente. That's wonderful to hear. I believe that's all of the questions on my side, Bente.
Okay. So then we'll wind up the sessions. From our side also, there are no more questions. And today also we have gathered and discussed the Dhamma and listened to a Dhamma sermon. And all that merit what we have accumulated, we'll share with all celestial beings and past relatives. and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path Roshan Nibbana. We will recite the traditional verses. Ittavatacha amhehi sambhatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavatacha amhehi sambhatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavatacha amhehi sambhatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasatthaja bhummatta devanaga mahindika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanang. Akasatthaja bhummatta devanaga mahindika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanang. Akasatthaja bhummatta devanaga mahindika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparang. Nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang vo nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang vo nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya sadu sadu sadu.
Thank you.